Today is Thursday, February 20th, and this is the World Socialist Website. One month of the Trump administration. The oligarchy versus the working class. A statement of the Socialist Equality Party. Today marks 1 month since the second inauguration of Donald Trump. The events of the past 4 weeks have confirmed the analysis made by the World Socialist website the day after the election, that Trump's return to power represents the violent realignment of the American political superstructure to correspond with the real social relations that exist in the United States. The main elements of the first month of the Trump administration are: first, the assertion of unlimited presidential powers in the assault on immigrant workers. Beginning on his first day in the White House, Trump signed a series of executive orders establishing the framework for mass deportations and police state measures. Under the pretense of responding to a non-existent invasion at the southern border, the administration has asserted unlimited powers that will be directed at all opposition to the policies of the corporate and financial oligarchy. The initial executive orders seek to abolish birthright citizenship guaranteed by the 14th Amendment, eliminate free speech rights for all immigrants in the United States, massively expand the role of the military in domestic affairs, and lay the groundwork for mass deportations on an unprecedented scale. These measures establish a framework for stripping millions of people of their rights and authorizing the president to override legal and constitutional constraints at will. Second, the global expansion of U.S. militarism. Over the past month, Trump has significantly escalated U.S. militarism, deepening the ongoing genocide in Gaza and laying the groundwork for broader wars in the Middle East. He has openly endorsed the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, declaring that the territory must be cleared out, a policy Israel has embraced and begun implementing. At the same time, Trump is reorienting U.S. imperialism's global strategy to secure critical resources and trade routes. He has revived proposals to annex Greenland and assert control over the Panama Canal, both vital for global trade and military logistics. Washington is ramping up economic and military pressure on Canada and Latin America in an effort to establish U.S. domination over the entire Western Hemisphere. These actions are all preparations for direct confrontation with China, as the administration intensifies economic warfare, expands trade war measures, and seeks to dominate global supply chains, particularly in rare earth minerals and semiconductors. Third, an assault on the working class and the destruction of social programs. While the Trump administration expands war abroad, it is carrying out a social counter-revolution at home. Through Elon Musk, in the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, the administration is implementing a restructuring of the state in the interests of the financial oligarchy. The goal is the complete destruction of social programs, the elimination of all constraints on corporate profit-making, and the consolidation of a surveillance regime to suppress opposition. The first major step in this process has been the mass firing of federal workers, targeting agencies that provide essential public services. Tens of thousands have already been purged, with entire agencies shut down overnight. The Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, and the Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS, have been among the first to face deep cuts. Through DOGE, Musk is spearheading a plan to slash $2 trillion in federal spending, eliminating programs that benefit the working class while transferring even greater wealth to the super rich. A key component of this process is the establishment of an AI-driven surveillance system. Musk is integrating data from the IRS, Social Security Administration, and other federal agencies to construct a modern-day blacklist. The system will be used to target political opponents, criminalize dissent, and carry out economic retaliation against workers who resist. Ever more openly, Trump is declaring that he is acting as a dictator. On Tuesday, the White House's official social media account posted an image of Trump wearing a crown, accompanied by the declaration, "Long live the King." This came just days after his assertion that, quote, he who saves his country does not violate any law, unquote. The Trump administration does not simply reflect the ambitions of corrupt individuals. It is the political expression of the American corporate and financial oligarchy, which has concentrated unprecedented levels of wealth. At the same time, the policies of the Trump White House are not a demonstration of strength, but of crisis and desperation. The oligarchy confronts the long-term decline of its global economic position, a massive mountain of debt built up through a series of bailouts of Wall Street, the catastrophic consequences of its own reckless militarism, and growing opposition in the United States and throughout the world. The Democratic Party is not an opponent of this process, but one of its chief architects. It is not a party of social opposition, but a pillar of the capitalist state, fully complicit in the destruction of democratic rights and social programs. While the Democrats present themselves as critics of Trump, their opposition is entirely from the standpoint of ruling class strategy. Their greatest concern is not his dictatorial ambitions, but that his policies are undermining the U.S.-led war in Ukraine and weakening Washington's hegemony in Europe. This is why, after 1 month of Trump's presidency, their loudest protests are not against the gutting of Social Security or the use of military force against immigrants, but against supposed appeasement of Russia. While Trump represents a shift, he also arises out of a broader process overseen by both Democrats and Republicans. The Democratic Party has no real constituency for the defense of democratic rights or social programs. The destruction of welfare programs for the poor, which accelerated under Clinton, continued under Obama and Biden, who oversaw the greatest transfer of wealth to the rich in history. The central priority of the Biden administration was the escalation of a global imperialist war, including the U.S. NATO war against Russia and Ukraine and genocide in Gaza. Now, with the return of Trump, the Democrats have no intention of mobilizing mass opposition to his administration. Their fear is not of Trump, but of the working class. The Trump administration's violent realignment of the state is not occurring in a vacuum. It is a response to the growth of class struggle within the United States and internationally, as the ruling class seeks to preempt and suppress mass opposition to its policies. But the realignment of politics does not take place on one side alone. The past 2 years have seen a significant increase in working class struggles, including among aerospace workers, logistics workers, educators, auto workers, healthcare workers, and service workers. Opposition is already emerging among federal workers and government scientists resisting the Trump-Musk wrecking operation. There is enormous anger among postal workers over the administration's plans to privatize the Postal Service, which would result in mass layoffs and the destruction of a critical public institution. The Trump administration's policies are being implemented under conditions of staggering social crisis, with millions already facing poverty, homelessness, and lack of access to health care. Last week, 2 children froze to death in Detroit after their family was evicted from their home, a horrific preview of the consequences of Trump's agenda. At the same time, public health programs are being gutted as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread and new disease threats, such as H5N1 bird flu, emerge unchecked. The dismantling of public education and mass cuts to social programs will have devastating consequences for millions, including many workers who voted for Trump. The scale and speed of these attacks will provoke an immense movement of opposition, including calls for a general strike. A principal obstacle to this developing movement is the pro-corporate trade union bureaucracy, which has worked systematically to suppress workers' struggles. During the Biden administration, the union apparatus played a key role in enforcing corporate interests, including the imposition of a government-backed contract on railroad workers that they had overwhelmingly rejected. With the return of Trump, the union apparatus is adapting itself to the new regime, just as it did under his first administration. Teamsters President Sean O'Brien has positioned himself as an advisor for the White House, while UAW President Sean Fain has pledged his willingness to work with Trump on nationalist economic policy. The AFGE, or American Federation of Government Employees, which represents hundreds of thousands of government workers, is doing nothing to oppose mass firings. It is telling workers to rely on the courts or make futile appeals to the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB. The pseudo-left organizations, which operate in and around the Democratic Party, also bear direct responsibility for the rise of Trump. Over the past decade, these forces have sought to divide the working class along racial and gender lines. The Socialist Equality Party is spearheading the fight to organize the working class against the Trump administration, uniting workers in a struggle against dictatorship, war, and capitalist exploitation. Central to this effort is the International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, or IWARFC, established by the International Committee of the Fourth International, or ICFI, to provide workers with the organizational means to coordinate their struggles across industries and national borders. The IWARFC is actively fighting to build rank-and-file committees in workplaces, schools, and neighborhoods, independent organizations of struggle that will serve as centers of resistance. These committees will unify all sections of the working class in defense of their social and democratic rights, linking the fight against mass firings and social cuts to the defense of immigrants and the struggle against war. Through a powerful network of correspondence and collaboration, the IWARFC will provide workers with the guidance and support needed to coordinate strikes, protests, and mass actions in the United States and internationally. The fight against dictatorship is inseparable from the fight against capitalism. The Socialist Equality Party advances a socialist program to reorganize society in the interests of the working class. The wealth of the financial oligarchy must be expropriated and used to fund universal health care, education, and secure well-paying jobs. The imperialist war machine must be dismantled, ending U.S.-led wars and redirecting military spending toward rebuilding society. A workers' government must be established to place political and economic power in the hands of the working class, not the capitalist oligarchy. We urge all workers and young people who want to take up this fight to join and build the Socialist Equality Party. The working class is the only social force capable of stopping the drive to dictatorship, but it must be armed with a revolutionary leadership and program. The SCP is committed to building this leadership, preparing the working class for the immense struggles ahead and fighting for a socialist future. Trump issues executive order asserting absolute authority over independent federal agencies, by Patrick Martin. In an executive order issued Tuesday evening, President Donald Trump asserted absolute authority over federal agencies created by Congress that were intended to have a degree of independence from the White House. Embracing the most extreme version of the so-called unitary executive theory put forward by the late Justice Antonin Scalia, Trump claims that any congressional restriction on the presidential control of the executive branch is unconstitutional. The order asserts that independent agencies like the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, and the Federal Election Commission, or FEC, must be directly subordinated to the president in both their decision-making and their financial resources, and names Russell Vought, director of the White House Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, to be their overseer. The language of the order is a chilling declaration of quasi-dictatorial power, stating, quoting, "All executive departments and agencies, including so-called independent agencies, shall submit for review all proposed and final significant regulatory actions to the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, or OIRA, within the Executive Office of the President, before publication in the Federal Register," end quote. It continues, mandating the OMB director to, quote, "provide guidance on implementation of this order to the heads of executive departments and agencies to establish performance standards and management objectives for independent agency heads and to periodically report to the president on their performance and efficiency in attaining such standards and objectives, unquote. In effect, the directors and boards of these independent agencies will be nothing more than junior employees of Velt, who will act for Trump, setting their budgets in the scope of their jurisdiction and overruling their actions if they should clash with Trump's dictates. Section 7 of the executive order specifically prohibits the general counsels for these agencies from making any interpretation of the law that contradicts that set by the White House. It reads, quote, "The president and the attorney general, subject to the president's supervision and control, shall provide authoritative interpretations of law for the executive branch. The president and the attorney general's opinions on questions of law are controlling on all employees in the conduct of their official duties. No employee of the executive branch acting in their official capacity may advance an interpretation of the law as the position of the United States that contravenes the president or the attorney general's opinion on a matter of law, including but not limited to the issuance of regulations, guidance, and positions advanced in litigation, unless authorized to do so by the president or in writing by the attorney general," end quote. This begs the question of why any of these agencies should have attorneys on their staff at all, since they are bound hand and foot by the legal interpretation set by the White House and Attorney General Pamela Bondi. The executive order is based on the theory of the unitary executive, long derided by historians and constitutional scholars, regarded as a fringe theory cooked up by Scalia and the Federalist Society, the organization of right-wing lawyers and judges from which Trump selected every one of his court nominees during his first term. This theory repudiates the 90-year-old Supreme Court precedent set in the Humphreys executor case, which held that Congress had the power to set up independent agencies, whose directors were not replaced with each new administration in the White House, but could only be fired for cause, such as misconduct in office. While Scalia's successors in the fascist wing of the court, like Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, have indicated their desire to overturn the Humphreys ruling, claiming that Article 2 of the Constitution makes the president the sole possessor of the whole power of the executive branch, this position falls apart upon the slightest historical analysis. The Constitution was clearly written with the intention of making Congress, not the president, the most powerful branch of government. Congress legislates, and the president is charged with faithfully executing those laws, not making the laws himself. The separation of powers is not absolute. There are numerous instances in which the powers of the legislative and executive branches intermingle. The president can veto legislation, but Congress can override his veto. The president can pardon, but not in cases of impeachment by Congress. Moreover, those sections of the Constitution where the president is given explicit authority, such as his role as commander-in-chief of the armed forces, would be superfluous if he had 100% control over the executive branch at all times, as the unitary executive theory claims. Only one exception to the unitary executive is laid out in Trump's order, when it declares, quoting, "This order shall not apply to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System or to the Federal Open Market Committee in its conduct of monetary policy. This order shall apply to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System only in connection with its conduct and authorities directly related to its supervision and regulation of financial institutions," end quote. From an intellectual and legal standpoint, this exception is nonsense. If the president possesses inherent constitutional authority over all independent agencies, that applies to the Federal Reserve as well. Like the other independent agencies, he appoints the members of its Board of Governors, including the chairman, with the advice and consent of the Senate. Trump asserts authority over the regulatory powers of the Fed, but not over its conduct of monetary policy. This is a limitation that concedes that the real power under capitalism lies with the financial markets and those who control and manipulate them, the banks, hedge funds, private equity groups, and giant investment trusts. Wall Street would react with extreme disapproval to any assertion of presidential authority over the setting of interest rates. World financial markets would doubtless be even more alarmed. The practical consequences of the executive order are likely to be felt immediately. Even before it was issued, Trump had named Vought as interim director of the Consumer Financial Protection Board, or CFPB, the independent agency set up under the Obama administration after the Wall Street crash of 2008-2009. Vought has shut down the agency and fired all its workers. White House control of the FCC will allow Trump to directly intervene into the operations of the corporate media, blocking or promoting mergers and takeovers depending on which group of media barons is aligned with him, and imposing the policies demanded by Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, the corporate owner of Fox News, and Elon Musk, owner of Twitter, and head of Trump's budget-slashing Department of Government Efficiency. Trump's executive order portrays his sweeping assertion of presidential authority as the essence of democracy since, quote, the president in turn is regularly elected by and accountable to the American people, unquote. But the president will now have direct control over the Federal Election Commission, or FEC, putting him in a position to manipulate the election process, imposing requirements to hamstring the campaigns of those who may seek to run against him or against his minions in Congress. The first legal challenge that could bring the unitary executive theory to the Supreme Court has already been filed. Hampton Dellinger, head of the Office of Special Counsel, the independent agency that handles whistleblower complaints against federal agencies, challenged his firing by Trump and won favorable rulings first from a federal district court, then from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Acting Solicitor General Sarah Harris announced last weekend that she would appeal the Dellinger case to the U.S. Supreme Court, seeking a ruling from the court overturning the Humphreys precedent and establishing Trump's unlimited power over the independent agencies. Massive police intimidation of UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese in Berlin by Stefan Steinberg. Following the cancellation at short notice of her planned lecture, Colonialism, Human Rights, and International Law by the Ludwig Maximilian University of Munich and then by the Free University of Berlin, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, finally spoke in Berlin in a room organized at very short notice and under police surveillance. Photos of the meeting in the central Berlin editorial rooms of the daily newspaper Junge Welt show riot police inside the meeting as Albanese spoke. Objections to the police presence in a public lecture by the newspaper management were swept aside by police officers who remained inside the meeting for its duration. According to some reports, members of the German security forces also attended the meeting. Police vans were outside, parked with dozens of police on hand to intimidate all those attempting to enter the meeting. At the start of her speech, now with the title, Reclaiming the Discourse, Palestine, Justice, and the Power of Truth, Albanese declared, quote, I have to admit that about 75 hours in this country have made me pretty nervous, and I cannot wait to get back to peaceful Tunisia, where she is a resident. I have never felt this sense of lacking oxygen that I feel here, unquote. In her speech, Albanese recounted, quote, the suppression of the Palestinians by Israeli settler colonialism, describing the genocide in Gaza as, quote, one of the most pressing problems of our time, unquote. Addressing the role of Germany in a number of genocides, including the Nazi Holocaust of 6 million Jews, she criticized the repressive climate in Germany, and why it was assumed that only politicians and journalists should decide what constitutes genocide. Albanese, an Italian citizen, is a widely respected expert on international law who, in her official function for the UN, declared back in March 2024 that she saw, quote, reasonable grounds, unquote, for assuming genocide in Israel's military action on Gaza. Albanese expanded and concretized this claim with her report for the UN last October, which stated that the actions of the Israeli government following its invasion of Gaza fulfilled all of the criteria according to international law for the crime of genocide. This is the message that the German political establishment and media is desperate to suppress. Since stepping foot on German soil 3 days ago, Albanese has been subjected to a massive campaign of intimidation by the German political elite, Zionist organizations, and the police aimed at preventing her from speaking. Following the cancellation of her lecture in Munich, Albanese has faced a torrent of abuse and slander, with leading pro-Israeli German newspapers running provocative headlines such as terrorist propaganda in lecture halls. The right-wing mayor of Berlin, Kai Wegner, joined forces with the Israeli ambassador Ron Prosor and the Zionist Verein Initiative, or Values Initiative, claiming that Albanese's exposure of the genocidal policy of the Israeli government reflected, quote, anti-Semitic worldviews, unquote. And she demanded that the president of the Free University in Berlin cancel Albanese's lecture. This chorus of denunciation was joined by Berlin Senator for Higher Education, Ina Seisbora, of the Social Democratic Party, who declared, quote, in my view, Ms. Albanese's statements meet all the criteria of anti-Semitism, and I question whether the safety of Jewish students is guaranteed at a meeting planned in this way, unquote. Parts of the press close to the Left Party also took part in the smear campaign against Albanese. While Junge Welt made its premises available, Neues Deutschland wrote in a commentary, quote, in fact, Albanese is by no means a neutral rapporteur. Instead, since her appointment in 2022, the Italian has been constantly working to further tarnish the image of the once-respected United Nations. She legitimized the Hamas massacre in southern Israel on the 7th of October 2023 as a reaction to oppression by Israel. Whether Albanese can make a meaningful contribution to scientific discussions can therefore rightly be doubted. End quote. In a protest against the cancellation of Albanese's lecture at the Free University, around 40 people occupied a large lecture hall at the Free University campus Berlin on Wednesday morning. Blogs on social media show police intervening on the Free University campus, evidently intent on forcibly expelling the occupiers. Unable to speak at the Free University, supporters of Albanese then organized an alternative venue, the Kohlhaus, in Berlin. Overnight, Zionist provocateurs sprayed the walls of the Kohlhaus building with the slogans Albanese, you are an anti-Semite, and UNRWA supports terror. By Tuesday morning, this venue was also canceled by the building's landlord, following pressure from the authorities. On the same day, a new venue was found for Albanese to speak that evening. The police invasion of Albanese's talk in Berlin ominously recalled the Palestine Congress organized in Berlin in April 2024. After just 2 hours, the planned four-day conference was stormed by riot police and subsequently closed down. At the time, the World Socialist website and the Socialiste Gleichheitspartei, or Socialist Equality Party, SGP, condemned the German state's crackdown, as we do now, and warned, quoting, it is not only directed against the Congress and its supporters, but aims to suppress all social and political opposition. Under conditions in which the ruling class is again relying on militarism and war, and is planning massive attacks on the working class, protests are not allowed, unquote. Since then, in a wave of repression, artists, students, and other opponents of the genocide, including Jewish activists, have repeatedly been criminalized, censored, or repressed with police violence for their opposition. Even though Albanese did eventually speak in Berlin, the political authorities, in the lead-up of the German federal election, are intensifying their efforts at creating the atmosphere of a police state in order to intimidate and suppress the growing social and political opposition to militarism, war, and the genocide in Gaza. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.